the Saturday Morning Update.
It is the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. A happy Father's Day weekend to you. John Gizzi joins us. He is the White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. And a happy Father's Day weekend to you, John.
Happy Father's Day weekend to you, Rick.
Let's start with the John Bolton book. As the Los Angeles Times puts it, there has never been such a score-settling memoir by a recently departed top White House official who eviscerates his president and former colleagues so ruthlessly. And Bolton's got incoming fire from both the Democrats and the Republicans.
Well, he certainly does, Rick. Incidentally, an historical footnote, the last time one can find a book by someone close to a president who was still in office is 1939, when Raymond Moley, formerly the top speechwriter for FDR, came out with a book 7 years later in which he details his own break with the president, explains why he became a Republican. But the most personal thing he put in there was he never knew FDR to read a serious book. John Bolton puts a lot more things in there that are personal, private, and thus subject to dispute by others who know President Trump. Look, it wasn't too many years ago that I was reporting on John Bolton when he was one of the biggest draws on the Republican fundraising dinner circuit. He could fill hotel rooms, get wild cheers as the UN ambassador who stood up to America's enemies. He was considered tough and smart, and many urged him to run for president himself. All that is dust right now. John Bolton got his chance to be in the White House, albeit as national security advisor. He came in when many who supported President Trump felt that he was too much of an interventionist on the world scene at a time that they had supported a Republican known for being a non-interventionist. It wasn't a good fit. More importantly, he talks about the president committing other impeachable offenses beside that which he was eventually tried for and acquitted in the Senate. In other words, the Ukraine election and U.S. involvement. And what the answer is from Democrats in Congress, why didn't you come and testify before about this? It might have changed the outcome of the Trump trial. There's a lot of ifs, ands, and buts out there, but very few are saying right on John Bolton. He's in a conundrum now, according to presidential historian David Piotruska. If the Democrats win, the liberal media and those who hate Donald Trump's guts won't need him anymore. If Donald Trump is reelected, no one will pay attention to him because it means the public vindicated him, John Bolton's charges notwithstanding.
How politically damaging would you think this book will be?
Not too, because, again, the Democrats are going to say he was too little, too late, and simply waited to produce a book that would give him a $2 million advance. Republicans see him as a quisling, a betrayer of confidences at the president, and many are saying he confabulated things. I would say that John Bolton will be interviewed, as he will tomorrow night, by ABC's Martha Raddatz. He's had excerpts of the book in the Wall Street Journal. He'll have a good run with it, and then he will fade back into obscurity.
Tulsa, Oklahoma, the scene of the first Trump rally since the COVID-19 virus stopped everything in the United States. Your thoughts on the importance of this for the campaign?
Well, there's a lot of important things to note. First of all, Oklahoma is Trump country. I talked to Congressman Tom Cole of the Sooner State, who feels that not only will the president win big, but veteran Senator Jim Inhofe will be reelected, and the one Democratic House member, someone who voted for impeachment of Donald Trump, will go down. So obviously, Tulsa is a great site for the president. In addition, he gets to thumb his nose at Dr. Anthony Fauci and others who keep warning about crowds. his supporters are going to turn out, they'll be close together, and they're not going to care about rules, although I suspect most of them will be wearing masks. The most important thing to find is that Donald Trump is in his best campaign element when he has rallies like this. He never fails to fill the House or leave them cheering on the way out. Whether there are protests, whether there is violence, one will only have to wait and hope not. But this is a Trump show, and the president is going to be loving it, as will his supporters.
We can take one name off the possible list of Democratic vice presidential candidates as Amy Klobuchar drops out of the race and suggests a woman of color should get the vice presidential running mate slot. Your thoughts on Amy Klobuchar and where that selection process goes next?
The day that Officer Derek Chauvin was suspended from the force and brought up on charges was the day that any chances Amy Klobuchar had of being the vice presidential candidate were inflamed. She's just now saying what has already happened is fait accompli. As the prosecuting attorney of Hennepin County, that is Minneapolis, she had no less than 9 complaints of brutality against Officer Chauvin and never took any action. Hence, her candidacy is an impossibility in the post-George Floyd world. Now, one of the things she said was she would like to see a woman of color on the ticket with Joe Biden. Already the favorite to be the former vice president's vice presidential candidate is California Senator Kamala Harris. She is the first woman of color to be senator from California. She's been district attorney of San Francisco, state attorney general, and U.S. senator. Many call her the female Obama. But anyone with a record that long, particularly in law enforcement, is going to be under the microscope and may not fare that well. The left may not like her because of stand she took in a state with a death penalty and a three strikes you're out law. The right may not like her because of some esoteric stand she takes, such as prosecuting parents for truancy when they don't make sure their children go to school on time. We'll see. The other contenders are former National Security Advisor Susan Rice, Val Demings, the police chief of Orlando, Florida. They're probably the big three. The lone candidate who is not a black woman is, of course, Democratic Senator Elizabeth Warren of Massachusetts, and she's right now low in the totem pole.
And, John, before we leave, we should spend just a minute on the polls because many of the media outlets are just running with the Biden momentum in the polls. At this point in the campaign, how significant?
Well, it certainly is significant in the sense it's going to rally Democrats, and it will make his choice of a vice president all the more important. Is the woman that Joe Biden wants to share his ticket someone who's going to maintain that 50 to 38% lead that everyone is talking about? On the other hand, it should be pointed out, Donald Trump is someone who defies polls. His very election in 2016 was against virtually every poll in the country. And he has this ability, and I've seen it with a lot of politicians over the years, that he is so controversial and so incendiary, a lot of people will not admit to voting for him, but they do. So I would say take the polls with a good shaker of salt right now, and we'll talk more about polls as we get closer to November.
John Gizzi, White House correspondent, chief political columnist at Newsmax.com. As always, thank you.
Well, thank you, Rick. And today I just want to say two people who are going to be on my mind for the next 48 hours. My dad, Al Gizzi, Marine Corps veteran of World War II, teamster, devoted husband, father, and loyal friend, and my late father-in-law, Jim House, also one of the brave band of brothers. I hope they're together in heaven today.
Wonderful Father's Day sentiment. Thank you, John.
Thank you, Rick.
And it's the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. We'll talk with Jim Trusty next, but first, Allison Oakley is in the WMAL Traffic Center this morning.
Traffic in Virginia on 95 is moving well between Fredericksburg to the Capitol Beltway. It's only about a 38-minute ride right now, and 395 is accident-free as you ride between the Springfield Interchange to the 14th Street Bridge. Just looking at 66, Haymarket, Gainesville. Watch out for some fog. It's for the most part at the tree level, not so much on the surface level. Don't have any accidents on 270 as you go between Germantown toward the lane divide. 95 looks great if you're riding between Laurel and the Capitol Beltway, and 50 is a good run to get toward the Bay Bridge. Now from Garage Door Repair. The WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some patchy fog this morning, but that'll burn off pretty quickly. Expect partly sunny skies, scattered afternoon storms, and some of those may contain some heavy rainfall. Highs today in the lower 80s. Tonight, storms will come to an end. Partly cloudy, patchy fog, lows in the 60s to near 70 degrees. For your Sunday, Father's Day, partly cloudy skies, isolated afternoon storms, highs in the mid 80s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
68 degrees in the nation's capital, 719 on the Saturday Morning Update on WMAL. Father's Day weekend on the Saturday Morning Update here on WMAL. I'm Rick Fowler. We are joined by Jim Trusty. He's at IFRA Law here in Washington, former chief of the Organized Crime and Gang Section at the United States Department of Justice. Jim, good morning and happy Father's Day.
Good morning. You too, Rick.
I want to start off with charges being filed in the case of Garrett Rolfe. He is the fired Atlanta police officer. He's facing charges in the fatal shooting of Rayshard Brooks. He's spending the weekend behind bars. He was booked on 11 counts, including felony murder, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, criminal damage to property, and violation of oath. Now, the timing of the charges and the degree of the charges, and I wanted to see what stands out to you first on the speed at which the charges were filed.
Right. Well, I'm not a huge fan of speedy prosecutorial decisions. I mean, sure, there are low-grade, simple cases that can be charged, you know, very quickly, but there was no real reason to rush. I mean, and this is a complicated case, no matter what you have to say. I mean, I've only seen portions of videos. I don't pretend to say that I've seen every possible bit of evidence in this case. I hope a prosecutor would be very deliberate and thoughtful and taking their time and making very difficult decisions. But this thing was on a fast track, and that's always a red flag if you're a defense attorney, that something's going on that's not truly the pursuit of justice.
Officer Rolfe booked on 11 counts, including felony murder. Now, you spent 28 years as a prosecutor. I wanted to get your analysis of the charges.
Well, the lead charge is that felony murder. And I have to tell you, when I first saw that, my initial reaction is, what felony? What are we talking about here? Because the felony murder concept is one that's basically designed to say, if the bad guy is already committing some sort of felony, like he's robbing a bank, and the bank security officer ends up accidentally shooting a customer, well, that's on the bank robber. You know, the robber set this in motion by committing a felony, and if a murder or a homicide, I should say, flows from that event, then we're going to basically say, we don't really care if you intended it. You created the risk. It's kind of a policy case law decision now in statutes across the country, where if you're committing an underlying felony and a murder happens, then you're accountable for that. And that certainly makes sense, right? In the drug deal gone bad, the bank robbery, whatever it may be. Here, Georgia is one of maybe a handful of states that reads the felony murder rule differently. And I had to research this because it was so foreign to me when I started hearing about it. The reality is, in Georgia, you can basically break apart the murder and charge it, as they did, as an aggravated assault, and use the aggravated assault as that other felony to support a felony murder. Now, I know it's a weird sequence there, but the bottom line is they're taking what's essentially the same conduct, a lesser included offense, or an offense that would merge at sentencing because it's all part of the same thing. And they're using that as a way of elevating it to a death eligible, essentially, first degree murder under the felony murder rule. That's really unusual territory, not in Georgia. There's case law that supports that approach. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me, but it's a very opportunistic moment for the DA's office to charge this as a death-eligible felony murder when in almost every other state across the country, we'd be talking about whether, at most, this is a manslaughter or a second-degree murder. So they have a vehicle to elevate this, to put a lot of pressure on Officer Rolfe. But, again, I'm not sure the evidence is all that clear. It's just that they have a legal hook that they can use.
We've all heard about the John Bolton book this week. Of course, the former national security advisor, highly critical of President Trump and the administration. There are efforts to block the publication of the book. The Department of Justice has brought the case. There was a hearing on Friday. Jim, break it all down for us.
Well, yesterday's hearing was pretty fascinating, and it was only part of the hearing that we could all hear. So the public part of the hearing was essentially Judge Lamberth, a very well-respected senior judge in the D.C. District Court, presiding over a preliminary injunction motion by the government designed to get John Bolton, not even the publisher, but just Bolton, to stop the publishing of his book based on the allegation that there's classified information that would go out. And it was kind of fascinating to hear the different sides of this in terms of really dramatic factual differences. The government basically came at it loaded to bear, and they said, look, John Bolton created this mess. He signed a contract as a national security advisor where he agreed he would never disclose any sorts of classified information. And as part of that contract, he agreed to go through the approval process that the national security experts put you through to publish a book. That's supposed to end with written permission. He didn't get it. He walked away, and he's making all the rules here. He's the one that needs to fix it. So that was kind of the sum and substance of the government's argument. Bolton's lawyer, Chuck Cooper, essentially said, well, we had permission. So there's a big factual dispute because there was a career national security person that went through the process with Bolton and apparently let him know that they weren't finding any more classified information at the end of that kind of painstaking review. What happened next, according to Cooper, is that the White House got involved. And instead of a career intelligence official making the call, political figures jumped into the equation and decided there was now newly found classified material that should prevent the book from going out. So there's a big factual dispute as to whether or not the process was fair and whether or not who found what types of classified information. And that's the type of thing that unfortunately the judge is going to have to figure out behind closed doors because it touches on classified information. But the real interesting part of this was that basically Bolton's argument, among other things, was the horse is already out of the barn. That, you know, the book has already been going out. There was a press conference the other day where a reporter was holding it in her hands while she shouted questions over towards the president. And it's already out, and he can't stop it. And Judge Lamberth, I think, was not a huge fan of that argument because he said, well, wait a minute. If it's true that John Bolton just decided to walk away and didn't go to a court and ask for a declaratory judgment, which was forever his option to try to get this thing unstuck, you know, it's really rich for Bolton to turn around and say, sorry, Judge, I walked away from the process. I didn't come to court, but now there's nothing you can do because I already got the publisher sending it out. That seemed to stick in the craw of Judge Lamberth, and that's going to be real interesting to see if he changes his tune from the sealed proceedings that have to follow.
So if they don't stop the publication of the book, what's next in terms of possibly Bolton being charged with the release of classified information, you know, separate from anything to do with the book distribution?
Right. Well, prosecutors are going to be in that position soon, I really think. I mean, it is going to be hard to completely put the horse back in the barn. So this book may get some play, and some excerpts of the book may get some play. And it's been an interesting ride when it comes to classified information. I mean, you don't have to go back too far in our recent history to know this has been a hot topic. My own view is that we have way too much tolerance for classified information getting out. This is not even a comment about John Bolton. It's just become expected the press can happily lap up classified or top secret information and put it out for the world to see. You know, everybody becomes a whistleblower, even if they're breaking laws doing it, apparently. So I'd like to see enforcement in general of the idea that state secrets should stay state secrets. But whether it turns out to be John Bolton's case that stirs the pot on that and leads to a trial, I guess we'll have to wait and see.
Jim Trusty at IFRA Law, thank you very much for the insight. Appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you, Rick. Have a good day.
And you have a happy Father's Day, Jim.
All right, you too.
728, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. We'll talk with Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer, and K.T. McFarland will have a very interesting perspective on John Bolton. Make sure you stick around on the Saturday morning update.
An invitation from Catholic Cemeteries. This Father's Day, the Catholic Cemeteries of the Archdiocese of Washington invite Catholic families to pray for those who have lost their fathers to the coronavirus and other causes. Pope Francis reminds the faithful of the ongoing deep bond between those of us who are still pilgrims in this world and the fathers who have crossed the threshold of death and entered eternity. On Father's Day, June 21st, the Catholic cemetery grounds will be open for personal prayer with appropriate social distancing from 7:30 a.m. to 7 p.m. Those who cannot visit the cemetery are invited to pray from home, especially for those who are grieving a recent loss, isolated from the embrace of friends and neighbors. All are welcome to visit the Catholic Cemetery's website to download complimentary Father's Day prayer cards for the spiritual work of mercy. For a Father's Day prayer card, visit the Catholic Cemetery website at ccaw.org.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington. Now, more than ever, depend on 105.9 FM WMAL, a Cumulus station. News now.
WMAL News at 7:30. Good morning, I'm Heather Curtis. The only statue of a Confederate general in the district no longer stands in Judiciary Square. In the last hour of Juneteenth protests, people put chains around the statue and ripped it down. They then set it on fire and chanted things including, "No justice, no peace." Eyewitnesses say D.C. police were there but didn't stop the protesters. President Donald Trump slammed them, tweeting, quote, "The D.C. police are not doing their job as they watch a statue be ripped down and burned. These people should be immediately arrested, a disgrace to our country." He then tagged D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser, whose relationship with him has been tense since the protests began. Hours after the Justice Department says he was fired, the U.S. Attorney in Manhattan says he's not leaving his post. Jeffrey Berman oversaw key prosecutions of President Donald Trump's allies and an investigation into his personal lawyer, Rudy Giuliani.
About 9 o'clock, the Attorney General, through the Department of Justice, issued a statement saying that Jeffrey Berman, the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, was stepping down. He said that the president had nominated someone else for his position and that Berman would be leaving the office on July 3rd. Well, about 2 hours later, Jeffrey Berman issued an extraordinary statement in which he said he did not resign and he was not resigning.
Correspondent Kara Scannell. In sports, Major League Baseball's closing all of its spring training sites over concerns about the coronavirus pandemic, according to a person familiar with the decision. WMAL Traffic and Weather next.
Montgomery County Ride-On continues to provide bus service for essential workers and essential trips only. This includes healthcare workers and first responders, as well as trips for medical appointments, grocery stores, food distribution centers, and pharmacies. Face coverings must be worn and are being supplied on board buses while supplies last. Please board through the rear doors unless you need the ramp or have a disability. Montgomery County Ride-On. Stay safe. Stay strong.
TheWindowMan.com, the region's leading replacement window company for over three decades, provides free, detailed estimates whether in-home, in-showroom, or from home by virtual appointment. Replacing your windows can be a substantial investment. Shouldn't you learn as much as possible about your options? Proudly known as the Educational Window Company, TheWindowMan.com never uses gimmicks or pressures to sell windows. They listen, then they educate, you decide. TheWindowMan.com, since 1989.
WMAL traffic from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
Traffic in Virginia on 95 is moving well between Fredericksburg to the Capitol Beltway. It's only about a 38-minute ride right now, and 395 is accident-free as you ride between the Springfield Interchange to the 14th Street Bridge. Just looking at 66, Haymarket, Gainesville. Watch out for some fog. It's for the most part at the tree level, not so much on the surface level. Don't have any accidents on 270 as you go between Germantown toward the lane divide. 95 looks great if you're riding between Laurel and the Capitol Beltway, and 50 is a good run to get toward the Bay Bridge. Now from Garage Door Repair. The WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some patchy fog this morning, but that'll burn off pretty quickly. Expect partly sunny skies, scattered afternoon storms, and some of those may contain some heavy rainfall. Highs today in the lower 80s. Tonight, storms will come to an end, partly cloudy, patchy fog, lows in the 60s to near 70 degrees. For your Sunday, Father's Day, partly cloudy skies, isolated afternoon storms, highs in the mid-80s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett, the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
I'm Heather Curtis on 105.9 FM, Washington's Mall, WMAL.
At the Rozelle Center for Healing, we care about your health and want to help you take your health in a new direction, far from drugs and surgery. Knowledge is the key to optimal wellness and control of your health. We offer free health education on chronic health conditions and natural integrative medicine treatments. Register for free today.
Join us online for our virtual presentation on how emotions affect your health on Wednesday, July 1st at 7 p.m. Register today by calling 703-698-7117 or visit rozellecare.com.
This is Dr. Tom Rozelle. After 43 years of practice and over a million patient visits, the Rozelle Center for Healing knows what works and knows how you can take control of your health and wellness. My team of doctors practice 21st century integrative medicine. Whether you suffer from chronic pain and fatigue, allergies or headaches, we can help. Take charge of your health before it's too late. Make an appointment today. Call 703-698-7117 or visit online at rozellecare.com. That's rozellecare.com.
Did your son struggle with the online learning our area schools offered? Let's be honest. Asking mom or dad to help explain physics isn't the best way to learn. But there is a better way. Fork Union Military Academy, located in Central Virginia. Fork Union is the nation's leading college preparatory military boarding school, offering top-notch academics and athletics for young men in grades 7 through 12. At Fork Union, they emphasize core values like respect, integrity, faith, character, and discipline. Right now, they are accepting a limited number of fall enrollments with single room occupancy for a safe on-campus educational learning experience guaranteed to help your son achieve success. For decades, Fork Union has proven that smaller classes, personal accountability, and mandatory study periods work to help your son achieve his full potential. Most impressive about Fork Union? 100% of their graduating seniors gain college acceptance. For fall enrollment details and to learn about their enhanced safety protocols, visit ForkUnion.com. That's ForkUnion.com.
Hello, this is Joe Cordell of Cordell & Cordell. I want to speak here to the dads who, during this crisis, are being denied access to their children or who are being excluded from key parenting decisions. I also want to speak to dads, though, with support orders which they can no longer keep current. In either of these scenarios, doing nothing is probably not a good strategy. Yet, hiring a lawyer right now is a difficult stretch. So in an effort to bridge this gap, Cordell & Cordell attorneys have reduced their hourly rates in addition to giving these dads a maximum fee pledge, which means that whatever happens, attorney fees are capped at that amount. So if you're one of these dads and you need help now, contact us. Remember, this is what we do.
Contact Cordell & Cordell to schedule an appointment with one of our firm's Fairfax area attorneys, a partner men can count on. 571-446-0000. That's 571-446-ALL-ZEROS. Online at CordellCordell.com. That's CordellCordell.com. Office in Falls Church.
Good morning and a happy Father's Day weekend, 7:37 on the Saturday Morning Update. I'm Rick Fowler, and we are joined by Lieutenant Colonel Tony Schaefer. He is the author of Operation Dark Hearts. Tony, good morning. It's great to have you with us today.
Oh, it's great to be on, Rick. Thanks for having me.
So a lot of controversy swirling around John Bolton and his book. We're going to talk with KT McFarland about John Bolton shortly. I wanted to get your perspective, though, from a couple of fronts here. You did an op-ed at the Patriots Post U.S. PatriotsPost.us, and in your op-ed, the headline is Betrayal of the Entitled Class of Washington Elites. You mentioned two players, and I think John Bolton sort of falls into that category also.
Yeah, so the editorial was supposed to be focused on how there's a class of elites, Rick, these people who come to town, come to Washington, and essentially profit either politically or personally, as in wealth, from their position of authority and trust. And we've seen this over and over, and I list a number of officials in this editorial to include two people who have been in the news a lot lately, a guy named John Kelly, who essentially conveniently forgot that he was in charge of the Marine Corps regiment in 1992 that went in to put down the riots in L.A., Los Angeles, the Rodney King riots, and then Jim Mattis, who, you know, essentially in an Atlantic article just completely blew his own legacy by conveniently leaving out prior uses of the military to put down rebellion and other civil disorder, disobedience and disorder. And it's unfortunate now, looking back at that, I didn't add John Bolton, because John Bolton has now become the latest who essentially is not trying to be a whistleblower. He's not trying to create a better understanding of what's going on. He's simply trying to do things which, in my judgment, are provocative, inappropriate, and possibly even illegal by the fact that, according to the government, I haven't seen the book, but according to the government, there's classified information, highly classified information in his book. So all these things together indicate to me that he is but another sellout who basically has no interest in protecting the American people, honoring his oath of office. He's honoring John Bolton's pocketbook, and that's what he's doing.
Very interesting. Now, we'll talk with KT about the political side of it, but I wanted to get with you on the national security implications of the kind of information that is in the book, conversations with foreign leaders. How does that impact us from a national security standpoint?
Significantly. The job he had as national security advisor, he had access to pretty much everything the United States can do regarding intelligence collection. That means extraordinarily sensitive sources. So even mentioning that we have certain insights to certain leaders may indicate how we know. Rick, I know this because I've run those type of operations where the very knowledge of something would indicate how you know, a very unique way of getting it. And so this is where I think the government has to be very careful. At the same time, John Bolton's been very sloppy with this. And so regarding that fact, regarding just the simple knowledge that we, the United States, at that level, know something about a foreign level, a foreign leader's actions, becomes something that should not be known. And I can't even go into detail of how to explain this without giving away kind of how we do it. So it's that bad. And John Bolton does know better. He's not a potato who fell off the back of a van coming into Washington. He's been here. He's a swamp creature, clearly, still, even now.
And I know you were quoted in a Yahoo News article. And a question I would have is, could he face charges for some of the information he's releasing?
So that's the part two of this. So first off, the government's going after his profits. I think they're going to win on that pretty easy, because the moment he goes against them, if he doesn't have written permission to publish, Rick, that he kind of loses his money. Secondly, then, if this is already out, which apparently it is, it's in the warehouse, it's supposed to be released Tuesday, and he does not have written permission, and there is still information that can be provably in court classified, he's got a good chance of being criminally charged. And some of the folks I've spoken to believe that may well still happen.
We've got about 2 minutes, and, narrative in the country right now, defund the police, disband the police. And I thought about this, and we shot note back and forth before we, do the interview each week.
Right.
And the notion that you defund the police or disband the police in the community, what does that mean in communities where there is already a high rate of violence? You have robberies, you have murders. If you look at the murder rate in Chicago, at 20-some people shot and killed in one day last week in Chicago.
Yeah, it gets worse. And so a lot of communities are fairly well prepared. I live in Northern Virginia. The police respond rapidly. In places like you mentioned, the urban centers, New York, Chicago, Baltimore, Minneapolis, it's all going to become worse by an order of magnitude by the very people who say they don't want the police. And this is going to be quite the wake-up call, Rick, because the police actually do a critical function. They train extensively to de-escalate. And when there's nobody to de-escalate, you're going to see Baltimore and Chicago replicated all across the country. And it's a shame that people don't understand this, but defunding the police will do absolutely no good for those at-risk communities, that Antifa, the Black Lives Matter, all these other people claim to be, you know, trying to help. It'll be just the opposite, which makes me think, in the end, these people don't want to help these communities. They simply want to create chaos for purposes of burning these places down. So that's what would happen if we have no police.
Well, there's just, a lack of understanding of what that would mean, and it gets sort of lost in the fog of the media narratives these days. Well, again, Tony, thank you very much for being with us. And the patriotpost.us, you'll find Tony's opinion piece, Betrayal of the Entitled Class of Washington Elites. Tony, thank you.
Thank you, Rick. Take care.
7:44, Saturday morning update on WMAL. We'll talk with KT McFarland coming up next, but first we're off to the WMAL Traffic Center. Allison Oakley's got the latest for us.
95 northbound at the first exit for Quantico, mile marker 148. That's where we had a crash as soon as it came. It went 95 northbound across the Occoquan. Still a great ride there, even through the Springfield interchange. 395, no accidents reported between Springfield to get to the 14th Street Bridge. On 66, further to the west, like Haymarket and Gainesville, you've got some fog, especially at the tree level. Not so much on the surface level. 270, no problems out of Clarksburg to the lane divide. And 95 and 295 between the Washington Capitol Beltway and the Baltimore Beltway, you're in good shape. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Stormwatch 7 forecast.
Some patchy fog this morning, but that'll burn off pretty quickly. Expect partly sunny skies, scattered afternoon storms, and some of those may contain some heavy rainfall. Highs today in the lower 80s. Tonight, storms will come to an end. Partly cloudy, patchy fog, lows in the 60s to near 70 degrees. For your Sunday, Father's Day, partly cloudy skies, isolated afternoon storms, highs in the mid 80s. I'm ABC 7 meteorologist Alex Liggett in the Stormwatch 7 Weather Center.
We're up to 70 degrees in the nation's capital, 7:45 on the Saturday morning update.
Did you know that homeowners now control $14.4 trillion in tappable home equity? Hi, I'm Mark Livingstone with Cornerstone First Financial, and this rise in appreciation has led to record numbers of people using their homes as ATMs. With the elimination of some HELOCs being tax deductible, credit card debt on the rise, and interest rate increases looming, now is the time to act if you're looking to fix your house up, eliminate PMI, or take cash out for any reason. Even if you're working with another company, use us as a sounding board to make sure you're getting the best deal for you and your family, whether a purchase or a refinance, and ask about our Hometown Heroes program. We guarantee we'll meet or beat any competitor on this very station, or we'll pay your mortgage for an entire year. Some restrictions apply. Call now at 202-625-1221. That's 202-625-1221 or cornerstonefirst.com.
NMLS ID 183265, consumeraccess.org.
Have you met a true hero lately? Hi, it's Jonathan Cotton with the Good Feet Store, and I've been thinking about heroes that I work with. Take Reese, for example, one of our store managers. Reese served in Afghanistan and sustained significant injuries when his MRAP vehicle was disabled by an IED. He was told he would never walk without a cane. However, after he was fitted with Good Feet arch supports, he was able to walk without a limp and without a cane. His service as a manager is exemplary, and we are proud to have Reese on the Good Feet team. The story doesn't stop there, though. Reese fell in love and got married to a beautiful nurse named Erica. And during this pandemic, who was on the front lines taking care of COVID-19 patients? You guessed it, Erica. Heroes tend to stick together. The Good Feet Store says thank you to all of our heroes. We especially say thank you to the heroes among us, such as Reese and Erica, for the many ways they have served us all. Come by the Good Feet Store and see what Good Feet Arch Supports can do for you. You never know. You might bump into a hero.
Blue Cross Blue Shield believes everyone should have access to health care, no matter who you are or where you live. That's why in every zip code, we're working to improve health and expand access to care, reinventing primary care to reduce chronic illness, and fighting food insecurity one meal at a time. We're investing community by community for the health of America. The Blue Cross Blue Shield Association is an association of independent, locally operated Blue Cross and Blue Shield companies.
.748, it's the Saturday morning update on WMAL. Great to have you with us. A happy Father's Day weekend. And we are joined by KT McFarland, and she has authored the book Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. KT, good morning.
Good morning, and I want to point out, my book is a lot better written.
a lot better than John Bolton's book, although it's not as famous or as infamous.
Well, it's probably a lot more accurate, I'll give you that.
That's true.
The Los Angeles Times describes Bolton's book and says, Bolton eviscerates his president and his colleagues. Certainly a different picture than you paint in Revolution, Trump, Washington, and we the people. And it's rare for a former member of an administration to make such a scathing attack and write a book while his president is still in office. Help us understand John Bolton. I want your take on John Bolton.
Okay, I mean, I speak of which I know. I've known John Bolton for decades. He and I were both Fox News contributors at the same time. We were often paired together on shows to discuss national security interests. And I clearly know the National Security Council job. I was the deputy national security advisor to President Trump, and I remain very close to a number of people on the National Security Council staff. Here's what happened. On Election Day 2016, I saw John Bolton, and I said, have you voted already? We were both in New York at a Fox News screen room. And he said, yeah, I voted for Trump. He's an idiot, but he's better than Hillary Clinton. So that's why I was kind of surprised when a year later he takes a job as national security advisor, which I later heard, by the way, that he had lobbied very hard to get. So here he's going to work for the idiot that he thinks is an idiot. And secondly, he had a completely different worldview. I mean, President Trump did not want to get out of foreign wars, and he didn't want to start more foreign wars, and he wanted to use economic leverage and trade to negotiate deals. John Bolton is the prototype and neoconservative. He's the guy who was one of the architects of the Iraq War, Afghanistan. As national security advisor, he wanted to fight. He wanted a war with Iran. He wanted to bomb North Korea. He wanted to send troops into Venezuela, all of which are completely the opposite of President Trump's approach. So I knew it wasn't going to end well. It was pretty clear it wasn't going to end well at all. And then as I talked to people during the time that Bolton was national security advisor, Trump ignored him. He had him in meetings because he had to. But the West Wing, other people hated him. And Bolton didn't interact with his NSC staff. He stayed on, taking copious notes for his book, which he intended to publish immediately after leaving the White House. According to a couple of people I talked to, Bolton would spend most of the day, when he wasn't in meetings with the president, he would go back to his office, close the door, and people weren't even sure what he was doing all day, but now we know he was working on his book. I guess the second point is, you know, if the man had any integrity, if he felt as strongly as he says in his book, and he has said in subsequent interviews in the last couple of days, that Donald Trump was unfit for office, that he was a great danger to the nation, then he should have stepped forward during impeachment. But he didn't. Why? Well, the book wasn't ready for sale yet. He wouldn't make any money. Congress wasn't going to pay him to testify. The next thing, though, is I've worked for, you know, four American presidents. I've worked in the West Wing. I've got a long history. I've known every Republican president and even anybody running for president in the Republican ticket for decades. Bolton has managed to shred presidential executive privilege, which gives the president the right to keep his conversations among his top aides privileged, private, unless the president chooses to waive it. It's called executive privilege. It's not Bolton's privilege. It's the president's. And Bolton just has shredded it for any aide to any president going forward. A president's never going to be able to count on the fact that his conversations or his thinking out loud or his mullings aren't going to appear on the front page of the New York Times the next day or in the bookstores the next month. And then if I can keep going with my rant, Rick, the headlines that you read about John Bolton's book, he talks about not what Trump did, but about what Trump is saying, Trump was thinking. And look, Trump is a businessman. He thinks out loud. There's no filter between what he's thinking and what he's saying or even what he's tweeting. He says a lot of stuff. But if you watch what he does, he doesn't do those things. I mean, for example, Bolton made a big deal about withholding aid to Ukraine unless Ukraine investigated the Bidens. Well, Trump may have wanted to do that, but he didn't do it. And there's countless examples of the things that Bolton accuses Trump of thinking or saying were never actually what Trump did.
Okay, so help us understand Trump's style, because we don't see what happens behind closed doors. We get these, according to a source, the president wanted to do this extreme thing, or the president wanted to do that extreme thing. Tell us a little bit about how he operates.
Well, I learned this during the transition and in Trump Tower, and I went and asked his people who worked for him for a long time in the Trump Organization, you know, is this how the guy conducts meetings? The way President Trump works and the way he's always worked in business is he thinks out loud. He doesn't read long policy papers. He likes to bat ideas around with his staff. You're sitting in the Oval Office with him, and you'll be there to brief him on Russian missile policy, and he wants to then ask about NATO, or he wants to talk about the Iranian oil. He jumps around to different topics. He thinks out loud. He says things that sometimes are way outside of the box, and he expects you to argue back. I mean, if you just sit there passively taking notes so that you can go tittle-tattle about them, that's not your job. He expects you to come back at him and say, you can't do this, or this is illegal, or I know what you're thinking, but maybe what you should do is approach it this way. My personal example was the day of early in the Trump administration when the Syrian president had used chemical weapons against his own people. President Trump walked into the Oval Office. I was sitting there with other national security aides for the presidential briefing, and he said, I want to take this guy out, meaning he wanted to assassinate Assad. So, and I write about this at great length in my book, and so I looked around at all the other erstwhile aides who were all looking at their shoes. And I said, well, Mr. President, you can't do that. And he said, why not? I said, first of all, it's against the law. And secondly, it's an act of war if we do that. And he argued, well, they're already at war with us. I said, okay, maybe. And then I said, but secondly, it's much more difficult to do than you think it is, because we tried it in the Reagan administration. We bombed one of Gaddafi's compounds thinking we'd get him, and we didn't get him. The intelligence is often faulty, or by the time you get it, the guy's already left the place. So it's harder to do than you think. And then finally I said, but Mr. President, that doesn't mean you do this. It means you just maybe don't do that. And so we got the General Mattis at the Defense Department to come up with some options. President Trump chose them, and he did it. So, but like, let's say John Bolton was in that meeting. How would he have interpreted that? He would have said, Donald Trump wanted to assassinate a foreign leader. Well, that's not really what he wanted to do, and that's certainly not what he did. He was just thinking outside the box, what can I do to punish this guy? And so always look at what Trump does. Not what he says. He says a lot of stuff. He tweets a lot of stuff. But it's deeds, not words.
Got about 2 minutes left, KT. Bolton is harshly critical of President Trump's efforts with Xi Jinping and Kim Jong-un. Bold moves the president has taken. It's a different approach than former presidents, and we don't know if it's going to succeed or not. But it could be a huge win for the president if it were to happen. And again, here's the president with a completely unique approach.
Yeah, you know, John Bolton writes about, well, President Trump met with the North Korean dictator because he wanted the photo op to help with his reelection. Look, does anybody really think somebody's going to get reelected because he has a picture of himself with a North Korean dictator? Come on, give me a break. But I think it speaks to Trump thinking outside the box. I mean, with the North Koreans, we thought at the beginning of the Trump administration that North Korea would have a nuclear weapon capable of going on a long-range missile and hitting the United States by the time of the end of Trump's first term. So it was a heavy priority for us to deal with it right away. And President Trump, to his credit, now has North Korea done some stuff? Yeah, but they're not where we were going to be. Things are not nearly as bad as we anticipated or they were capable of doing. And I credit that to President Trump's diplomacy. Now, Bolton says, well, President Trump gave the Russian dictator, the North Korean dictator, legitimacy on the world stage. Well, John, that was actually the point. Give the guy the legitimacy he craves, knowing that you can pull that rug out from under him anytime you want, and he'll be hard-pressed to not go along with what you want if he wants to continue to be the world-famous North Korean dictator. So I just think that in so many ways it's wrong of the arguments that he was making. And particularly, you know, John Bolton is saying, well, I told him that Trump told the Chinese leader, help me get reelected. Really? But the Chinese know that Donald Trump is the first and only American president who has stood up to China and given China a hard time. They know if Biden gets to be elected president, well, they can go back to the good old days where the Chinese were ripping us off. So that just doesn't, none of this stuff really sort of tracks the minute you get beyond the incendiary headlines.
KT McFarland, and we would suggest if you want a real picture of what's going on at the White House and how it operates, you get KT's book. It's Revolution, Trump, Washington, and We the People. And, of course, it's available at Amazon.com. You can even download the Kindle version right now. KT, as always, thank you so much for such wonderful insight.
Thank you. Talk to you next week.
You bet. That's it for the Saturday Morning Update. Garden Sense follows the news at 8 o'clock.
Whether you're buying a home or trying to lower your interest rate, finding the right mortgage company is often stressful and time-consuming. Listen this Saturday to the Mortgage Radio Show at 1 p.m. and now on Sunday at 3 p.m. The Mortgage Radio Show is your trusted source for mortgage news. Every weekend, host Teresa Strasser and Sean Metter will give you helpful tools for finding the right mortgage product to fit your needs. So tune into WMAL every Saturday at 1 p.m. or Sunday at 3 p.m. for the latest rates and information from Network Capital Funding here on WMAL.
When you're stressed, you just don't feel like yourself. New Natrol Relaxia, a full line of drug-free supplements to help you manage occasional stress and anxiety. A special blend of herbals keeps you feeling calm and balanced throughout the day. Because when there's less stress, there's more you. Try new Natrol Relaxia. Learn more at RelaxiaMood.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
WMAL-FM, Woodbridge, Washington.